if you really learn about it or it's talked about at all, it's kind of like people respond of like, oh, it's cool or it's interesting, you know, but like it, again, remember, it comes out of trauma. Like it's a challenging, heavy thing. But people just think it's like one of these very rare things that like they're not going to come across, and you will. You just may not recognize it if you're not prepared for it.
Hey everyone, welcome to Therapeutic Perspective. I'm Lisa Sauvignon, your host. This podcast is for mental health providers and grad students looking for real tools and techniques for clinical skill building and practice growth. We take an honest look at the methods and challenges of building a practice, developing clinical skills, side hustles, and second businesses, the fun side of being a therapist, and doing all of this while managing everything else that life has in store for us. So let's get started. Welcome back. If you've not had a chance yet to listen to episode 58, just know that this is part two of a two-part episode. With us today is Dr. Jessica Endress, and we're going to discuss dissociation, childhood trauma, and dissociative identity disorder, or DID. In these two episodes, our guest shares so much important information, not just about working with trauma survivors, but also how dissociation can show up in other diagnoses. We also discuss the treatment process, common assessments and questionnaires, myths of working with this population, and take a look at how DID may not present in quite the way you think it does. So let's go ahead and dive in and wrap up these two really great episodes.
I personally like sloths. That's like my favorite animal. And so people would like, you know, they'll give me them as like gifts and stuff. So I had a couple of stuffed sloths just kind of decorating my office or whatever. And I don't work with kids, but I just happened to have it. And she just like looked at it and was just like so excited. Like she was like real antsy with her hand. Like she wanted it, but like she couldn't really, I don't know if it was a part that could speak. And so I was just like, oh, like, do you want to see it? And I just kind of like offered it. And it was so calming and grounding because it was also towards the end of our session. I was like, I've got to get an adult part here because she's got to drive home.
This,
I can't just end it now, right? And so when I give her this and she's kind of like petting it and kind of, you know, really like just childlike wonder with it, I'm over here just like, okay, like just kind of nodding and trying to, you know, conceptualize what's going on. And I'm just kind of talking to her just like I would a kid. Like I just kind of shifted into how I would talk to a child. And then she kind of pulled herself out of it. So I'm like, oh, like, you know, do you like it? Do you have anything at home that you like? And then she was kind of starting to able to tell me a little bit about like a stuffed animal she had at home. And then she was able to like kind of switch back. And I kind of watched everything kind of like, you know, kind of muscles change in her face. She started to kind of look more, less childlike, more adult-like. That's more likely what switching looks like. Versus the dramatic, drastic things. Now, sometimes that does happen. These clients who have a lot of physical dissociation. They can move around and like twitch and stuff. Things like that happens all the time. Also, a reason that unfortunately they will give them like schizophrenia diagnoses because they're assuming it's a tardive dyskinesia thing sometimes from Thorazine and stuff like that. So sometimes it's drastic, but it's not like the movies. It's not like the movies at all. Like they're dramatizing that in a very ineffective and sometimes harmful and like offensive way. It's usually much more subtle where you know the client so well that you kind of start to notice when the voices shift or kind of the facial muscles look different and they just kind of appear a little different to you. Mannerisms change. It's much more subtle. So when that happened, I was so grateful that I happened to have, you know, like a stuffed animal that someone had given me because it helped her ground. And then, you know, when she was done with it, she kind of put it to the side and was like a little bit embarrassed. And I was like, oh, no, that's fine. Like, I'm glad that was helpful. But it kind of helped her ground through the sensory stuff, right? So using a lot of sensory things to ground into the moment really, really helps here. And internally, they're just able to kind of decide, like, okay, we're about to leave. We need to pull this out, you know, and oftentimes they try to protect younger parts, the littles, and keep them inside. And so that happened really quickly and she was able to drive and everything went fine. And ever since then, when I was in person, which I haven't been for since I moved, but I would always keep some kind of stuffed animal around, some markers, some kind of like kind of kid things, because if littles come out, they want that, they need that, and they feel comfortable with that.
Yes.
So I think that's a helpful thing in person. In terms of telehealth, yeah, I need to know what helps the client. I need to figure out those skills for them. And I just guide them to it, you know? Sometimes if I'm doing EMDR virtually with clients too, I'll be like, you know, hey, where's like that soft blanket that you like or something? And yep. I'll have them like have it on their lap or have it on their hands as they tap, like things that could just help self-soothe. Animals, pets, like all sorts yep. of stuff that they have at their home that they don't bring to your office. Right. So I think it's a huge benefit to be able to use telehealth of their space mm-hmm. because it's where they're most comfortable and like use it to help them cope.
Yes. Oh, I so agree. Yeah. I'm 100% telehealth too. So from the get-go, the first session, I send out information about the first session. I include, please bring anything that makes you yep. feel more comfortable. Blankets, pets, you know, yeah. music, whatever works for you. So I'm with you. Absolutely beautiful. And I love the way you manage to, you know, help that client, you know, have a lovely, safe experience for the child part, and yeah. then regulate and return to the adult part that can drive home. Wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you have to do a little more, I've learned. Sometimes you have to kind of help those parts kind of step mm-hmm. in for the littles. But that one, that was my first experience with it. So I was always really grateful that it worked out that way.
Yes. Really creative.
Yeah.
Definitely. So what does the flow of your session look like? Once you're in there and you're working with them, you know, and things are going, do you do radial attachment work? What does that look like for you? Tell me a little bit about your process.
Yeah, so I do lots of different things. I think my primary thing is always a relationship, you know, and like you said, kind of thinking attachment focus. I'm always, I am happy to see them. Like I deeply care about my clients, you know, but like that, mm-hmm. that like delight to see them and like that connection. I think there's so much power and healing in just connection and safe connection yes. with someone. So I really just do everything I can to foster that. I typically always start off just asking people like, you know, kind of how they're doing or like something, you know, if they told me they were doing something fun, like something that's just kind of day to day. And then I usually kind of pivot us to something else that we're working on. Or mm-hmm. sometimes I do skill teaching and training. Like I also do DBT skills from dialectical behavioral therapy. And so I sometimes integrate that in there because these DID clients really, they need skills. They need to know how to kind mm-hmm. of handle things. And what's challenging is some parts of their system might learn the skills and can use them great. And then other parts are like, I'm not learning this. Like, I don't want to use this. I don't want to do this. And right. so you have to kind of get buy-in and you have to build trust and connection with all parts of that client. And so it's one client, one body in front of you, but it's like working with multiple clients and you're trying to get collaboration, internal communication, cooperation. You want to teach them how to work with themselves. Dr. Colin Ross has a book with, oh, I think it's Dr. Fung, I think is how you pronounce it, that they put together called like Being a Teammate with Yourself. Mm. And it's for DID clients. I think I linked it in the references here where it's like lots of different skills and things to build that internal communication and cooperation so that we can help each other internally versus mm-hmm. working against each other. Because again, I don't think that, you know, different parts are trying to like be harmful. They just sometimes right. are not even aware that there's other parts there or like that what they're doing is not helpful and they just need some communication. So main goals tend to be like skill building, internal communication, grounding with dissociative symptoms, things like that. So every session looks very different, but kind of overarching, like those are things I'm trying to work towards. And in terms of goals, I will just kind of talk a little bit about historically, a lot of people may have heard of like integration and like mm-hmm. fusion, things like that. And that was a big thing too, I think, with like the counselor that treated Sybil and all that stuff. That was a very strong belief for a very long time. But kind of what we've seen is like, it's not one, always possible. And two, it's not what clients usually want. Some of right. them do. I've had a handful that do, but most of them are like, well, I don't want to lose everyone inside mm-hmm. because it feels like they're dying. Right. And that feels terrible. We don't want that. Yes. Right. And so it's like, we yes. don't want to kill them off. We want right. cooperation. We want functionality. We want, one of my clients told me kind of in the community, a term is like functional multiplicity. And mm-hmm. I really hold on to that term. I really like that because you're not trying to get rid of the multiplicity. You're trying to get functional with it so you can live your life, whatever that looks like. And right. functionality, I don't have to define that. The client has to define that. And I right. think that's really important for us to stay focused on. in the past, you would hear a lot about like the host, or I have people ask me sometimes like about a DID client. They're like, I can't tell who the host is. There's rarely a host or like a main person, you know, and sometimes there's not a part that even aligns with like the name, the legal name of the client, you know, like
right. It
can look so different. Everyone's system is very different, and we have to get to know that system and work within it and help and support them as a whole, all parts of themselves, versus trying to like figure out like, you know, how many, you know, parts are there? Like, I don't care. Right. Like, I don't care how many there are. I just need to know what we're working with and like, you know, who we work with and who shows up, and that's what we do. But sometimes people get very distracted with finding the host, with counting the parts of the DID system person, and then also with like naming and assigning, you know, names and agencies. And that's not necessarily as important as it is of, okay, like, tell me about them. What are they like? Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. How can that help us? Right. Mm-hmm. And then what are things, what are skills, what are things they need, and what can we do for them? Right. And so like helping every part find their place in their system, yes. I think is also very important, because they all deserve to be there. They all have a purpose. Right. And we just have to make that be, again, more functional. But yeah, I think that that's like an important thing I wanted to make sure I could throw in there.
Oh, that's incredibly helpful, because the language I've heard, and I won't use it, I don't like it, is the apparently normal part, or apparent, yes. And I'm like the ANP, and I'm like, I can't, yeah. I just, you know.
Well, that comes from the structural dissociation theory, which there's some pieces of that I think are helpful. It's kind of been a predominant one, but like also I think the research does a really good job of like valuing it, but also being critical of it, which is good at kind of how it needs to evolve and based on what we know. But yeah, it talks about ANPs, which is apparently normal parts, and then emotional parts. And I think, you know what, they're all normal, right?
Yes.
And they're all also emotional, because that's how we are as people. And like, that's just normal. And I think trying to categorize them is kind of hard. A little bit, the only thing that I do kind of like, and this is a little bit more, honestly, IFS, is I like the idea of kind of manager parts, because there are some parts that like are a bit more emotionally disconnected from trauma that are able to be very, like they manage day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And then some parts we kind of have to encourage to become those manager parts to help with the functionality.
Yes.
And then those parts that are stuck in the trauma, those are the ones that need deep trauma work, you know? And so we're working very differently with all parts of the clients. You know, it's, I always say it's almost like doing family or group therapy, you know, but it's one client.
So what are your preferred modalities? What do you use? What does that look like? And how or why is it effective?
I think my biggest modality like approach is just very, very relational. Mm-hmm. I do, again, kind of think in broad terms of Adlerian, and, you know, Adler was kind of about like life stages, and I don't know that like I stick to like the ones he defined, but like moving through life at different stages, like where a client is at, I try to say like, you know, what are they wanting? What are their goals at this point in life? And how can we get, you know, all their internal system to like work towards that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So very like collaborative, very, I would say humanistic, but I'm more directive, not as non-directive, but I'm very flexible as a counselor. Mm-hmm. Like if something's not working, like I'm going to ditch it and I'm going to just go with something else. Like I'll kind of have a plan, but then I'll be able to move. Oh, we need to deal with this today. Right. Where it's like, oh, we were going to do, you know, this activity or this thing today, but they come in with a big issue. And I just say like, hey, I know we planned on this, but like, let's push that off and like, let's deal with this. And that's most important. So I think I try to be very like flexible to like their needs kind of thing. Yeah. I think kind of in general, Adlerian is like very flexible and like technically eclectic. And so I get to use lots of different techniques. I know I mentioned DBT. I do like that for skills. I really, really like that. I do DBT virtual skills groups for adults. And sometimes, not all my DID clients, but some of them I've had kind of go through that group as well, because it's more structured than our individual sessions. And I can kind of get them all the skills, you know. And there's a group aspect that I think is also helpful for them too, to be around other people. I am trained in EMDR, but I don't do EMDR with my DID clients. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because one, I've not had DID clients that wanted that and that were ready for that and could tolerate it. And two, I don't have the training for it. So there's beyond basic training to work with DID clients with the EMDR. People do it. Mm-hmm. There are ways to do it. I just have not invested in it yet because I haven't had a client where I'd even have the opportunity. So I've just been like, I'll put that on the back burner. And just kind of focus in other directions. Ego state stuff is very helpful. That can also go very well with EMDR. I know people use that a lot too. I don't find CBT to be helpful for these clients at all. And I, you know, no offense to anyone who has CBT. I think it just doesn't fit with like a lot of their needs.
Right.
You know? Some of the skills does help to an extent, but it doesn't encompass everything. And even the trauma focused CBT, which I know often is, you know, geared towards children, but you can also use, you know, the narrative and different things with adults. It just still doesn't quite seem to be enough. And it just, they just need more and they need a lot of patience and time and trust and different things that just CBT is too goal oriented, I think, or like too quick a lot of the time for them. They need more time. And so I don't tend to use that really at all. But yeah, I'm very blended. I like to kind of use a lot of different modalities. I'm also a yoga instructor. And so I very much bring in, yoga. I very much bring in like some of the other limbs of yoga, right? So there's 8 limbs of yoga. Most people are familiar with asana, which is the poses, right?
Right.
In Western worlds, we've turned that into like lots of fitness and stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's 7 other limbs having to do with like, you know, ethics and breathing and awareness. And so the breathing and awareness are, those are some of the limbs that I like to really bring in. And I think I do that a lot better as a yoga instructor than based on counseling trainings on mindfulness. Because I've been to both. I've been to the ones for the yoga training and I've been to the counselor training. And I don't find the mindfulness for counselors training to be great. I think that the more holistic approach and kind of taking training from other professions, other areas is more effective, I think. Sometimes I do have clients that are into yoga and they know this about me. And so like, you know, I'll write them sequences and we'll kind of go through some asana to like connect in other ways. But I'm always kind of sprinkling in things that, you know, are yoga based and yoga philosophy there as well. And just a lot of the body work, a lot of the and body work to build that connection. That's probably the biggest, strongest, I think, approach that's most helpful with dissociation as a symptom across any disorder is the rebuilding the connection between the mind and body. And that, you know, we talk about grounding techniques and grounding exercises, and some of those are good, but some of those are very mental. They're not very physical. And we've got to do some physical something to like reconnect like mind to the physical, you know, like it just makes sense. So grounding things that are mental are fine. Those are good, but we also want touch and we want, you know, some sort of movement in the body as well. And that's been very helpful. And I can do that. And, you know, we do that in lots of different ways. It doesn't have to be like, you know, oh, now get into downward dog. That's what people often think.
Sorry.
But I don't do that.
No.
Right. I don't do that. It's much more like where I'm just like, okay, like as we breathe, like we're going to like bring our hands together and feel the touch and then we're going to let them come away. And like, you know, I mean, just anything that's like connecting and with the breath. So it's usually very different when people find out I'm a yoga instructor. What I actually do with clients looks very different from what they're expecting.
Yep. Oh, I could be here all day just in this thing right here, just this section, because we are so similar. I mean, in terms of our training and our, now, you know, I'm an EMDR provider too. I have done like the advanced trainings for complex PTSD, but I'm also a registered yoga teacher and whatnot. And like, I'm like, yes, I feel it. I mean, it's amazing how we fall into this and you learn just being there with them. You learn what it is that's needed in the moment. And I found the same things as you. I'm also certified in DBT. I do use some of those skills. Even when you were talking about, you know, well, they come in and something big has happened and we're in this moment, we'll go to that. You're still using DBT skills in those moments with them. Exactly. We already talked a little bit about myths, but I didn't know, is there anything else that you wanted to add to that or anything you feel needs to be said here?
So I think the most common one is that it's like incredibly rare. Like I said, I even had psychiatrists telling me like, you're never going to see it in your career. And I think that's what most people think, right? In grad school, if you really learn about it, or it's talked about at all, it's kind of like people respond of like, oh, it's cool or it's interesting, you know, but like, it, again, remember, it comes out of trauma. Like it's a challenging, heavy thing. But people just think it's like one of these very rare things that like they're not going to come across, and you will. You just may not recognize it if you're not prepared for it, because people are not very likely to be like, "Hi, I hear voices in my head, and they don't sound like me. They sound like other people." People are just unlikely to do that because that's very vulnerable and it's very scary of like what's going to happen, you know? Mm-hmm. So when people do tell you that, evaluate it, explore it, like lean into it and see what's there. See what you find out, right? If it's DID or OCD or complex trauma, or if it's something totally different, like just lean into it and explore it. One of the other things that I wanted to say was that there's a lot of kind of stigma against like if it's even quote unquote a real disorder kind of thing. Yeah. And there was a lot of like the false memory wars. DID got really lost in this and through like the 90s, 80s, 90s stuff here, where basically DID gets accused often of like only existing in the United States because we had like public mania or kind of, you know, we were really interested in this. And so then counselors and psychologists and doctors are just kind of like creating this in their clients. And there were some instances that were like kind of abusive where like that was happening. But again, rare and not what's happening. We've done so much research on all of this to support like this is a real diagnosis. We have lots of valid and reliable assessment tools and diagnostic tools for this. But it's also across the world. So like they've done lots of studies. Dr. Ross works often in his research, he'll come across, he does stuff with Dr. Fung, who is also in China. And Dr. Ross was in Canada and like they worked with somebody else, I think in Italy or something. And they've done studies of, you know, these different areas. They've done some studies in China, in Turkey, in Europe, where like we find the same rates of DID in the community, in the inpatient, in the outpatient settings. That those are very similar. They're similar to North America, because that's been a big critique of like, oh, well, it's just like just an American thing or just a North American thing. But you have all these other countries, you know, where they've experienced like lots of war and, you know, things like that. And you do have higher rates of it. But again, they're similar and we're using the same assessments, the same training, like all of it is really good research. And it's been over the years. There's also an epidemiologist, I think you pronounce it's Vedat Sar, I think, that does a lot of epidemiology research on this too. So it's not just coming from mental health field. It's like epidemiology as well as like a broader health issue. Finding that like, yeah, this is all across the world and these rates are about the same. And like, this is still a public health issue we need to treat, we need to work with essentially.
Yes.
There's a good article that I linked here too that it's a handful of authors on that one, but Bethany Brand, I think, is the first one. That's why I remember it. That's like DID fact or fiction and goes through a lot of these in a lot more depth. And Colin Ross has one that was actually in the Journal of EMDR as well, that went through myths for DID also.
Yep.
So there's a lot more than this, but those are just kind of a few. Is that like, again, it's rare or it's just made up. And it's just, when you work with a client, once you work with a DID client, you just don't understand how people can think it's made up, because people aren't choosing to struggle with this. It's just their struggle. Like that's just what's happening.
Starting a practice? Opening a private practice is exciting. It's also overwhelming, but you don't have to do it alone. Therapeutic Perspective can help. We offer a variety of video and pod courses, including one just for starting your first practice. Check out our All Things Private Practice course by using the link at the bottom of the show notes. Just select this episode, click the link, and visit our website. So it doesn't look like the movies, but it's still here. It's still real. It's present. And it's something that being aware of and at least having some idea of either where and how to get consultation or when to refer is important.
Yep.
Definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. When to get consultation and like training and of like, oh, I want to work with this versus I think I know what this is and I don't want to work with it. I want to give a good referral. Like either option is okay and good. Like it's not something that you are kind of willing to go all in and like want to really, you know, learn how to work with. That's okay. Just find somebody that does work with it and pass them along, right? Or even to sending them for more evaluation. Sometimes I see people just a couple of times for further evaluation, and then collaborate with their counselor just to see like, hey, is this what's going on? And then if it is, like, okay, you need to find referrals, you know? So those are ways that we can still advocate and care for our clients, even if we're not going to keep them and to work with them.
But if you love it, because I can hear your passion talking about it, and I know I love this work. So if you love it and you're like, yeah, this is your thing, then hey, go on, all in with this. Let's do the training. And if it's not, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And I think it's really good too if you are a person where like you come across a client that you think is DID or ends up being DID and you do want to learn how to work with it, it's really important to let them know, hey, I think this is what's going on.
Yes.
I will let you know I don't have a lot of experience with it, but I want and I'm willing to like learn. And so like, it's obviously up to you. I'm happy to give you referrals, but like, if you want to stick with me, like I'm going to do this training and I'm going to like really work on like how I can help you best. And a lot of times, like if you've got a good connection with them, they want to stick with you. Sometimes they're going to be like, well, I want to go to somebody, you know, who already knows how to do it. But just being honest about like where you're at in your competency, I think is a big ethical thing to communicate. And that's why I kind of did the very beginning with that first client where I was like, I'm going to talk to my supervisor about some stuff and then I'm going to consult with my supervisor, you know, keeping, of course, your confidentiality. And then, you know, I'm reading these books, I'm doing this training. And she was like, okay, great, cool. Like she was fine with it. And, you know, I'm grateful for that client as well because, you know, she gave me a lot of experience, you know, hands-on and getting to see what I was learning about and to use things and like, I feel like that's how I kind of got so deep so quickly with this population too. And so I'm always very grateful to her. She's great.
Absolutely. When you're working with these clients, what's telling you, hey, we're achieving our treatment goals. Yeah. Things are starting to switch and maybe even it's time to talk about termination. How do you know?
Yeah, it's a little bit challenging, right? So I think one, you don't necessarily see no dissociative symptoms. You're not going to get zero on your DES score, right? Like that's not going to happen and that's okay. That doesn't mean they're not getting better. If they're getting more like they're able to do things that they wanted to do, right? So like, you know, if they're like struggling with like school or if they're struggling with a job or in their relationships at home because of all the dissociation, if that's improving, then that's always good. If they feel more in control of their ability to use skills and to do something when this happens, that's very good. If they have more communication internally, right? So that's always my biggest goal is for internal communication and then internal cooperation. Those are like my two big things for them. Obviously, safety and stability, you start there, but you usually get there by working with the internal parts, right? So I want them talking to each other. I don't want those thick dissociative walls where they can't see through the wall to see the other parts and communicate. I want them to be able to communicate. And so when they're able to communicate more, when they're cooperating more, when there's no part that's almost like, you know, sabotaging some of the goals that they have, you know, out of fear, out of all these different valid reasons. But when that's not happening as often, right? So I worked with one client where she had a part that would, everything would be going great. And then the second things were going great, she'd like wake up like super drunk. There's all these, and she'd like throw in a party and she didn't know about it.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to work with that part about like, one, I got that part to go to AA, which was actually helpful for a while. It isn't something that like she needs to do forever, but it was something that was very helpful for that part. And then getting her to like share memory and like not kick everybody out. It's different parts kind of have different abilities to do co-consciousness and share kind of what's going on with other parts, or they can kick everybody out and be very thick on those dissociative walls and do whatever they want. Nobody knows what happened.
Right.
I don't want that. I want to see that improving. I want to see communication, cooperation, and like more awareness of where's all my time going, right? Even if I know, oh, that wasn't me, that was someone else, and I loosely know what was going on, that's better than I went to sleep on Tuesday and I woke up in class on Friday, right? Like that's very helpful if I see that changing. Sometimes, you know, this improves and that's all that's needed. And that's all that they will kind of work on and do. And throughout, you know, different periods of time of working with them, you know, when they come back, I might still be working on those things that I think are still kind of considered the safety and stabilization phase. Other times those things are getting better. And it means, hey, they're ready for more specific direct trauma memory work, right? Other clients are not going to be into that and they're not ready for it or they don't want to do it. And that's okay. Yeah. I let the client lead me of what they want to do. And just as a note, it is not very linear of like, oh, we are in this phase and now we're in this phase. It jumps back and forth and back and forth. You're working on trauma memory. And then all of a sudden, you know, they throw a party again and they're like, you know, all these drugs that they didn't think they had done in a long time. And you have to deal with that. And then maybe you come back to the trauma memory or maybe you're in something totally different. And so you do jump around a lot. You have to be very like flexible and not hold on to like a linear form of progress. And you have to be able to point out every point of progress because they are making progress. Even if they have something like that happen, like that's a part of this. It's going to be very up and down, but we do get there eventually. And we get more to that stable, consistent place. It's just, you know, it's not going to be, ah, we've done step one and now we're going to step two. It's going to be a two-step back and forth.
So as we begin to wrap up, and I think we have learned so much about working with these clients, with this population. I've learned a lot sitting here, you know, in this space with you today, and I've really enjoyed our conversation. I'm curious. Okay. So we talked a little bit about how termination looks different, that, you know, you think of it too. I really think of it as part of relationship. Like I said, object permanence is part of this. And so, is there anything that you recommend for post-termination care or the way this wraps up differently for this population?
I think what can be very helpful is if there are like support groups or ways that they can kind of stay connected. So I mentioned I'll do DBT groups. So sometimes it's like, if they're not meeting with me as frequently, and that can happen for so many reasons, then like maybe they'll do group for a while. There's also some organizations that I linked that will do support groups. There's one that's actually out of Canada, but it's a peer support and they're able to work with clients in the US called Multiplied by One. Mm-hmm. And they've been really great support group options for some of my clients. Now it kind of depends to kind of where they're at, right? And so some support groups, it's like for people whenever they're, you know, their dissociation is very chaotic and like things are really stressful. And then there's other people that they're pretty functional. They just need to talk to someone that can accept and know that they have DID. And so there might be different types of support groups that you might seek out. So I think that's very helpful for our clients when you're thinking about termination. And like when we're saying termination, like you said, we're kind of more talking about almost like a break or a period between therapy, you know, is almost like what it ends up being. But that's often something that I think about whenever I get to that point. And sometimes I will, you know, when we're kind of getting that point of like, hey, you're kind of on your own, you're good. You know, every 3 or 4 months or something like that, I might just shoot them email and just like, hey, like I just got to thinking about you. I hope you're doing okay. And we usually just kind of touch base a little bit and then, you know, either they keep going or they're like, oh yeah, I have really needed something. And cause sometimes they don't always speak up for what they need. You have to kind of help them learn to do that. Right. Yes. So I check in with them sometimes and, you know, sometimes they're doing good and they just continue doing their thing. And other times they come back. And so I sometimes will check in with them and just kind of see and try to touch base, kind of stay in their outer circle a little bit so that they know that I'll be there if it's needed.
Yeah. And you're teaching them to notice too. I mean, they do need help, you know, advocating for themselves and support with that, but also learning too. Oh, wait, they may not have recognized, here's what I'm feeling, here's what I'm needing. And you're touching into that and just reminding them, check in with yourself, what's going on? Even if nothing is needed, that's okay.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Okay, so we've touched on some of the resources that you shared, and I thought maybe you'd like to discuss those a little more because you did share a lot of wonderful resources. You want to talk through some of those?
Yeah, so I did share quite a few like research articles for those of y'all who are into that.
Yes.
There's also some things I shared too that are like the MID website, the DES website, trauma model therapy, some things like that. And then some of the other book and article references y'all will see too. I do reference the DDIS and the MID, and I think I put the SCID on there. I can't quite remember. Yes, I did. And I do also reference to like the ACE study, I think it's Felitti, I believe is how you say it. At all. There's like a whole group of people that worked on the study for the ACE study, but that is, we learned a wealth of information from that.
Yes.
It started off as, I think a thing related to weight loss or something like that. But we have learned a lot about how like childhood trauma affects us as adults. What do you know, mm-hmm. right? It affects us. And so that might be of interest for people as well. And then I also am sharing the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation, the ISSTD. Yes. They're mm-hmm. a wonderful organization. Yeah, my mentor professor and dissertation chair got me connected with them. And he was like, I think you'll like them. And I was like, I'm going to go to the conference. And they let me present, which was super cool. I got to present at their conference in Seattle a couple of years ago. And everyone is just so incredibly like welcoming and like, you know, mm-hmm. compared to them, some of them have, you know, 20, 30 years experience.
Yes.
And, you know, I feel so intimidated, but they're so just like excited because like they want to pass the torch to people that want to do this work. And mm-hmm. so that's very, very cool to see. And meeting some of these researchers and stuff, they're a lot of them are also clinicians. Like you feel that and they care mm-hmm. about what they're doing, the work that they're doing. And I think that's just so powerful. And it's just a great community. I loved getting to go to that. And just a cool little thing. Their annual conference is going to be in Frisco next year.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
Yes. Okay. So if anybody in DFW area or just Texas or you want to travel, mm-hmm. it is in Frisco. And so I'm very excited about that because that is close to home for me. So that's easy to get to. They have wonderful, wonderful training across like kind of beginner, intermediate, like more advanced. Like they have all sorts of different things.
Oh, yeah. I like the discussion posts is what I get a lot out of. And I don't know if we have control over how often we get them. I get them daily and mm-hmm. I read them. So I'm with you. That organization is amazing.
They have like the forums, right? Like kind of those
Thank
forums.
You. Yes.
And some of those are very active and like lots of good stuff being shared. And then there's also webinars that are live. There's also mm-hmm. trainings that are recorded, kind of like certificate programs you can do. Like they just offer a lot. And they have some like kind of fact handout sheets and stuff that are like helpful for clients. Or if you do work with kids and there's trauma or dissociative mm-hmm. disorder stuff going on, like to help explain that to parents, you know, like there's a lot of really great resources there, like for you and also for your clients. So I think they're a good organization. I really like them. Yeah. Two of the other ones I shared were organizations that are kind of peer-led or kind of peer-driven mm-hmm. for the DID and OSD community. One of them is the Multiplied by One that I mentioned, which actually started out as being they wanted to create an app to help facilitate that internal communication, but through our phones because it's 2023 and that's what people do. We used to have people, you know, journal, and some people will journal, but some people are just only going to do it on their phone. So they're still in development, I think, but that was the idea she started with. And then it kind of grew into, hey, I want to be like a hub, actually. And now mm-hmm. they've got support groups. They've got lots of good DID resources and like research, but then also lived experiences. There's a really good documentary. I want to say it's on Hulu. It came from A&E, so I'm not sure where it lives anymore. And it was the, Many Faces of Jane is what it's called. And Jane Hart, she's involved with Multiply by One. She's involved with a handful of these organizations as well. And she's like a parent and she has DID and she talks about that. And so remembering that like these clients, like, I mean, they can live life and do their thing. They can have kids. And like, I have a couple clients that are lawyers, they're veterinarians. I mean, like some of them are like in weird prestigious, you know, occupations and other people are in other things. I think the biggest thing that always stands out to me about these clients is they're incredibly intelligent and like mm-hmm. resourceful. And they're, you know, like they might be very well read or like big thinkers and like just so many things that like just really impress me about it, whether or not it's their job. I think it's just so powerful of like they have so much that's great about them that we need to remind them and help them see and like foster and support. They are such an asset to like the world society community. And these are not people that like, you know, can't do anything, you know, like they're great. And like, they are wonderful as they are and what they're capable and able to do is good, whether that's a lot or that's a little, like whatever that looks like, it's just really wonderful. And they have great community in these, some of these organizations. The other one I linked was another Myths article that's Beauty After Bruises is one of them, another organization. And then there's another one called Infinite Mind, I believe.
Okay.
So there's a handful here that are just really good. And it's just driven by the DID community. And I think that's, you know, they're doing great stuff there.
I'm so glad they have the peer-led stuff so that they can feel not alone, but also that you address that myth there at the end. You know, I think a myth is that they're by themselves, they're not able to function, that they're, and that's just not true. You're talking about amazing humans who described unimaginable or survived unimaginable things and who do amazing things, whether it's music, art, creating an app, a prestigious career, whatever it may look like. And we want to know this as clinicians because we want to make sure that our clients know that too.
Yes, I think that's so important. I like that you mentioned art. Yes, because I have a couple of clients who are just big creatives, like writers.
Oh yeah,
and again, just like man, if being a philosopher was like, you know, a job anymore, I guess it kind of is. You know, they have philosopher professors and stuff, but like, you know, like old school philosophers and stuff, like this is who they would be. Like they would be so good about thinking about all this stuff and like writing and creating. And I have another one that is just like an amazing painter. You know, they are people too, right? And like they have so many just multifacets of themselves. It's just those things are a little bit more separated, right, than, than other people they might be. But they're all just as valuable. And I think that's very important for people to remember. And like you said, just to change the perspective of what we think their lives, quote unquote, have to look like. You know, they can look so different, right? Just like any other person.
And that's part of recognizing them, realizing that it does look different in every way, shape, or form than what we've been taught or led to believe.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. Different isn't always bad. I have to tell clients that all the time, right? Maybe different can be good.
Can be amazing. Absolutely. Yeah. So I know in the beginning you talked about, you know, who you are and your experience with this population, but you do have a practice and offer consultation and have services that you provide. Would you like to share a little bit about, you know, those services and your business part, the business part of you? Can you share that?
Yeah, definitely. So, so I am Red Oak Therapy. It's just me. I just do a solo private practice, but I'm Red Oak Therapy. This is my private practice and I do all virtual services. So I do virtual counseling. I also do virtual DBT groups. I do those as low cost because I think they're a great adjunct to individual therapy. And so I try to make it like more affordable for people too. So anybody in Texas can do either of those with me. And then I do consultation for anybody that doesn't, people for consultation, those clinicians don't have to be in the state of Texas. They could be anywhere. It's just counseling services, right, that have to be in my state. But yeah, for working with trauma and dissociative disorders, for working with DID, for assessments, kind of figuring out like what is going on with this client. Like, I think it's dissociation, but I can't quite tell, like, you know, kind of just processing through it. Like you talked about, like using consultants is like very helpful for us with our work.
Yes.
So I offer all those things that are kind of, you know, in my specialty area. And then I also will do like, you know, speaking and different engagements like that. I like doing presentations. I love getting this opportunity to be on a podcast. There's a couple others that I've been able to do. One that is DID specific as well. And like, it's just really cool to get to do that and like talk about this and share about this. And like, I think people are a bit more open to like the idea of it at this time. I think they just don't understand. And a lot of our information in textbooks and grad school is just, it's just not up to par essentially yet. So I try to hopefully help bridge that gap. So, you know, I try to do presentations like at our state conference, at TCA and things like that, that I can find if they'll accept something on DID. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, you know, I have to kind of see what they'll accept, but I do like, you know, speaking engagements for, you know, if you want your organization to like know more about working with DID or assessment, then like you can hire me to do speaking in that capacity as well. I would love, like we were talking about with the medical facility, I would love to be able to do some, you know, more training on the dissociative stuff, medical people. So yeah, nurses, doctors, any of that out there, I'm open and wanting to do that too. And obviously with virtual, I can provide that almost anywhere virtually, but I can also, you know, travel and that kind of thing too. So that's a bunch of, you know, the businessy stuff that I kind of have going on. So if anyone would like to contact me about that, about any services for clients, for consulting, or for speaking engagements or training, anything like that, y'all can find me at www.redoaktherapy.com. Red oak is like the trees and therapy like what I do.
Perfect. Thank you. And I do want to share with our listeners, which by the way, listeners, thank you for hanging in with us. We're so glad you stayed. We hope you got something great from today. I know I learned so much and I had so much fun doing this. For those of you that don't know, Jessica, Dr. Endress, here our guest today, joined Therapeutic Perspective a while back. I don't know, has it been a year?
It's been a while, yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. So we do a free workshop series during the summer. I take a little break from that, but, you know, during the rest of the year, our Facebook community, which is just Therapeutic Perspective Community on Facebook, it's free. We do free workshops, and Dr. Andrews presented at one of those earlier in the year or about a year ago. Maybe we'll have you back at some point again.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I would love to have you there. And listeners, if you want to jump on over to the Facebook community and check it out, we have that. You know, you can find us on Instagram as well. I want to thank you so much for being here with us today. We had a wonderful time. Dr. Andrews, before we go, is there anything else that you would like to share?
No, I just thanks so much for having me. I love that I get to talk about this and that there's a space and that people are wanting to learn more about it. And yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. I can talk about it all day long. And so I'm really glad to have the opportunity.
Me too. Yes, definitely. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. We had a great time. I really enjoyed having you. And listeners, thanks for hanging in with us. Well, everyone, that's it for today. We're glad you joined us. And if you like this episode, click subscribe and leave a review. Also, check out our free clinician community on Facebook. Just search for Therapeutic Perspective Community. I hope to see you there and back here again in a few weeks for our next episode. Thanks for listening and see you then.